Not, you know, not even what many people think of when they think of a strip club is actually, I'll say, a more upscale strip club.
Right, kind of flash dance, right?
You pull people the cord think of the, water, of the flash dance or of, in Pittsburgh, say, your Club Elite or your Club Ed or whatever other, I suppose, like their elegance as portrays themselves as a very high-end sort of thing. And that is the high end of the experience, where the low end is, you know, when you're driving up, say, McKnight Road or up Route 22, and you see those shacks on the side of the road, and
kind of the metal
like
buildings,
adult books, you know, your metal buildings, your old, you know, not even so much your old Quonset huts, you don't see them anymore like you did in
Kwanzaa. This is the African American Christmas holiday.
No, Quonset huts.
Quonset huts.
I'm sorry. I'm, please don't interrupt.
I'm not sure where that came from.
I've heard Quonset.
There are fascinating associations there, which I think we should explore later.
So you say you're at these low-end clubs, basically.
Yes.
I have a question that I'm holding back on. Describe more, but I'm going to jump in a minute.
So most of these clubs, and many people have probably been in these places, possibly without even realizing it. They want to buy that gag gift for a party, or they want some porn, or they really want some porn, and they know that this is where you can find the hardcore stuff. They want a little sex toy or whatever. And they've probably seen the doors into back rooms. They've seen the little video booths and all, and they haven't really explored what's there. And these are the places where you actually have the peep shows. You know, you see these in the movies, the guys who pay a couple bucks and the little window opens and they could see somebody dancing in the little room or whatever. And they get the illusion that this is a private little show put on just for them, even though possibly there's a couple little peepholes around and all. And that's the sort of thing I'm largely talking about.
Can I ask what part of the country you did this in?
This was in Western Pennsylvania.
Okay, I am fascinated, and let me tell you why. I am certainly a customer of these places, or at least I have been in the past. I don't have as much, it's not even so much money as time anymore to go seek these places out. I cannot recall ever being in one with a peep show which featured a male dancer, and that's why I'm kind of fascinated.
Well, I was.
Is that unusual? I mean, how did that?
That is somewhat unusual. It turns out that the first place I did this at was looking for a bit of a hook. Frankly, they have competition, and the business that these folks are in is providing erotic, stimulating entertainment, and what they do to provide that is they try to provide something unique. Fundamentally, the kind of dancers that they're getting in these places are not your high-quality dancers. These are not your women either with the tremendous expensive breast implants. These are not very good dancers, frankly. What people are almost going for is the amateur feel. It's not that these places are particularly less expensive than like your club whatever downtown, but it's a different sort of experience. It's the whole fantasy that this is a direct sort of thing, whereas, you know, in one of these downtown places when it's, you know, 30 men crowded around a stage all waving their dollar bills, you don't feel that kind of individual attention.
Okay.
So
That's fascinating. Actually, that's an important insight, which I hadn't actually considered before.
Very much. We were advised to cater to the different holes. We would be told which hole or holes anybody would be watching through, and we would work towards those, not putting on a show explicitly for them. Especially if there was a single hole, it was very important to avoid tuning your entire performance to just this person behind there, because that almost makes it too explicit. They become subconsciously aware that you are catering to them. Or I shouldn't say subconsciously aware, because they have to be subconsciously aware the whole time, but rather it becomes consciously aware. What they want to do is consciously maintain this illusion for themselves, this little erotic fantasy. I mean, very frankly, these people are sitting there on the other side of this peephole. They're probably either there by themselves, or you would be amazed, I should say I was amazed, that this was largely couples that came.
Mm-hmm.
And couples would watch this together.
Straight couples, gay couples?
Both.
Both.
Different acts, different people would attract different sorts of customers, and there were regular customers for certain acts and certain people, and there was a regular schedule of who would be available when. But fundamentally, the people were there to get the thrill of the view, and this was a thrill that they were sharing with one another. And so there would be a lot of mutual petting or whatever going on.
I'd just like to remind our listeners that the phone numbers are 268-9728 or 621-9728. Corey, you look like you had something to say there a minute ago.
I did. I might have missed this when you explained this, but what is the window or the peephole like? Is it a one-way mirror, or can you see them as well as they can see you, or what? And how big is it?
So I worked at a couple different places. One place, the holes were literally holes. They were sort of knocked in a wall, and they had been very much made to look as if they'd occurred accidentally. And the theme of this place was sort of a forbidden pleasure kind of thing. And our act, or our dance, if you will, was not so much a dance as sort of an elaborate pantomime of people who were not aware they were being watched.
Oh, fabulous. Fabulous.
And so the whole thing was it almost had this feel of a sort of a performance art process piece. You definitely had the sense that the audience was in some way participating in the illusion that we were creating, or perhaps even more participating, because whatever we were faking, the audience was likely feeling for real in terms of arousal and excitement.
So did you do the whole Shield and Yarnell package, where they're like invisible walls and ropes that you were pulling and ladders you were climbing, or was the pantomime restricted strictly to sort of sexual,
It depends. One place, we worked a room that was made up to look like a bedroom, and the act was myself and this woman would arrive one at a time, and we would proceed as if we were simply going to bed and having sex, as would, say, a heterosexual couple. In the same room, another act that was done was two women together, and we also had a three-way act. It was rather interesting because these acts were possibly the least sexual of anything, because we had sheets on the bed, and so we would simply disrobe and climb on the bed and pull up the sheets and then sort of maneuver around to create this illusion that there was something going on that really was not in any way.
Did they turn you on? I mean, was it erotic for you? Did you get off on it?
That's an interesting question. I did not the first couple times.
It was very nervous.
It was more nerve-wracking than anything, especially it's interesting. It's a bit difficult to be literally put on the spot as a man. Mm-hmm. There are certain forms of arousal that are difficult to fake, mm-hmm. shall we say. And this is explicitly what certain people were looking for. But it turns out that there are ways to fake this, sort of sleight of hand techniques.
Really? You're talking about faking an erection, I think.
Yes.
Can you teach us so that we'll be able to apply these in our day-to-day life?
Indeed. I mean, so this is something that's certainly prized in the porn industry, is people who can get an erection on for the camera. Are you saying you figured out how to fake an erection by, like, some kind of...
Or is it when you're, like, under the sheets and stuff?
So under the sheets is fairly trivial. All it takes is some longish, hard object or a pointed finger, mm-hmm. or a toe or something in the right place, or even not necessarily the right place if you want to create a particularly large illusion. Although, really, for the sort of thing that we were doing, like I want to emphasize that these people that worked there, and I include myself in this, were not of an amazingly attractive body type. These are not people who are enormously well endowed, either in the male or female sense. We're not talking about implants here, big muscular slabs of beefcake, anything like that. This is really, and especially with these peep show sorts of things, trying to get a look at creating the illusion of average people and sort of being, imagine if you could peek into your neighbor's bedroom. And this is what really turns some people on. And so that's the illusion we were creating for them, especially in this one I was just describing.
This is one of the questions I had. I mean, let's be honest, you're a pretty big guy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not necessarily talking about the size of your cucumber here. I mean, you've got the beer belly thing going on. And frankly, I had always assumed that my beer belly, which is pretty good, has always precluded me from participating, from dancing. So, I mean, or were you much younger then? I mean, were you?
No, actually, I was heavier then. And this greatly...
So there's hope for me, is what you're saying.
The whole thing greatly surprised me. I was dating a woman at the time, and the way I got into this is I was seeing this woman, and she worked in this industry. And she worked at some of these places. And one night, one of the men she was supposed to work with was not able to make it to work. And because her income depended upon the tips that she would make, if she did not have the decent tips, she did not have the rent money. And so this was a very big problem to her when somebody canceled at the last minute and she needed someone to fill in. And so I was fortunately able to help her fill in.
So to speak.
That night. So to speak, literally. I was starting to describe this. My first time, I was completely unable to generate arousal on demand in front of anonymous strangers. It was...
You know, showering in the university center helps with that, actually. Sorry, proceed.
No, please. I might want to hear more about that later.
That's a very interesting thing to say. I will suppose the hot tub would be the thing.
Well, that too. I mean, the layer of foam sort of, you know, you can sort of masturbate.
No one knows what no one sees. But that was one of the interesting things about this peep show is, and the thing that freaked me out the very first time is actually picturing someone on the other side of one of these holes, frankly, sitting there and staring at me and masturbating. The whole idea really freaked me out, and I could not get an erection to save my life at that point.
So what was your first impression when you saw that first person? I mean, like, what was your... Were you thinking, this was it a man or a woman? And is this person a freak? Are they someone, some sort of ordinary?
I did not see. The woman I worked with, who was the woman I was seeing at the time, advised me that that it would be better for me if I didn't see them. Later, I realized the wisdom of this statement.
Did you feel in danger? Do you feel in peril ever?
No, that's the very interesting thing, is I felt very safe, partly because there's this wall there. There is also a very large, burly man who is minding the place at any given time, and he would brook no issue from any customer. And while it was not explicitly shown to me, I was sure there was a firearm of some kind under the counter that this man would not hesitate to use.
Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to amplify this sort of previous comment. Your partner or friend told you not to look at this guy because he was... Was it the idea that would make you even more nervous?
That would make me more nervous. That somehow seeing this person, I would be picturing this person concretely watching me. And that certainly seemed to be true, because the whole thing that freaked me out the first time was the notion that someone was watching me. And if I could have put a face on that person, then I would be perpetually thinking,
Dad!
If I ever see you, who's your daddy, baby? That I would forever see this person, you know, in public. And I would hide my head in shame, or I wouldn't know how to behave or whatever. Whereas when this person or these people are anonymous to me, that I don't have to, that somehow it's more liberating. And that was certainly true, because, like I said, the first time it was the notion of these watchers, and then after that I was sort of able to distance myself from the notion. A couple times it almost seemed a little exciting, thinking, wow, there are people who are actually paying to see me. And you were asking about the question of arousal. Mm-hmm. That was not very arousing, though. That was, frankly, just more exciting.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of a unique feeling to think that people would pay just to look at you or just to watch you. But that was not, for me, sexually arousing. And as I learned through this whole experience, though, what is sexually arousing for anyone varies widely.
How did you learn that? Just from the scenarios?
Just from the scenarios, because there were several scenarios that, well, frankly, would not have occurred to me as arousing. There were some that we did that were very typical, and I'll call them sort of the wet dream fantasies. You know, the one guy, two girls. We had several variations of that, which were very popular, and those.
And this is all very simulated. I'm just trying to picture the tableau in my mind.
We had a variety of them. There was a variation on the bedroom scene where there was an interruption. We stage an argument, and all three of us end up in bed together. Mm-hmm. And basically we would ad lib those. We would decide ahead of time who the couple was and who the intruder was, and sometimes the couple would be a lesbian couple and I would be the intruder. Sometimes I would be the couple with one of the women, mm-hmm. the other would be the mistress coming in, or sometimes it would be the wife coming in.
And so I'm going to be crude here. You guys were allowed to touch and mingle because you were performers, which is different from the customer.
Very much correct.
Okay.
We were allowed to touch and mingle. The customer was not involved. Most of the places where I worked, in fact...
Were you having sex? I mean,
no.
I want to know this. You know, this to me is...
No.
Because like I said, I've never seen this
particular There was
phenomenon,
no so. Penetration. Mm-hmm. involved. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of frantic activity that suggested that penetration is at any moment imminent, but penetration...
Which is probably better, actually, from a purposes of showmanship. Than
from purposes of showmanship, also from purely mechanical points of view,
mm-hmm.
there are certain issues. But also from the titillation point of view, some of the situations were a little, I'll say more exotic, although frankly, I came to quickly realize these are not so exotic, I suppose, in the industry. We had a few sort of light bondage type scenarios, and I say light, I while working at these places, we would have breaks. And bored with nothing else to do, frankly, you know, we'd look through all the materials there, look for inspiration, say, hey, could we try that? Could we try that? And also just look for a kick because, mm-hmm. hey, you know, when you're alone in a big room full of porn and you're bored, mm-hmm. you're going to be looking at porn.
But, you know, mm-hmm. I was just going to say that the questions proceed. You know, I have more questions than I even have time to express. How much are these customers paying on a per minute basis, just to give us a rough ballpark figure?
It varied widely on the location, the people I'd be working with, the time. There were times of day that were less expensive, times of day that were more expensive. Late nights were much more expensive. I believe the notion was, and I never really got clarification of this, that anybody who's going into one of these places at 3 in the morning is desperate.
And so did, I don't know if you touched on whether the legality of this, but is it legal, and does the penetration and actually performing a real sexual act have any impact on the legality of it?
My understanding, and I didn't want to inquire too closely lest I create the wrong impression, was that what we were doing was for the most part legal. And while there were illegal activities going on at these places,
such as
I mentioned these men with firearms, and I suspect that many of these men, frankly, are convicted felons who should not legally possess a firearm.
Okay, I thought you meant something more active.
No, from what I noticed, actually, there was a lot of care to avoid breaking laws or breaking specific laws. For instance, no one was allowed to bring alcohol onto these premises, and I mean you could not even bring a bottle of your own. Likewise, there was the strict prohibition, and we started to talk about this earlier, against customer contact mm-hmm. with the performers. And that was to avoid any sense that there might be any kind of prostitution or anything like that going on at one of these locations.
I'm curious about that. I know there's a place a couple exits east of here, about midway between New Stanton and Washington. Now this is a dance. It's a little place called Yukon, and it's a dance place. And I know that they were actually busted. I don't know the details. I wish I had the details because I love reveling and just rolling around in lurid, salacious details. But I don't have them. They were. I mean, I've been there, and they have a stage, and then they have the little room off to the side where you can go and get your special dance or whatever. And they were busted for prostitution, which they denied. But I'm just curious. How does that happen? And I mean, so did it ever happen?
Well, first of all, I'm sure that any place, as a matter of principle, would deny it, whether or not it was happening.
Right.
That seems fairly obvious. Did it happen? Yes, I'm quite sure it happened. However, there was a lot of care taken by the establishment to make it as difficult as possible. And it's rather interesting because the care was extremely elaborate in that it was very formalized and very ritualized, but it was very clear that you would have to be going out of your way as one of the employees, one of the performers at these places, in order to have the contact to set up a liaison for this purpose. So in other words, as your employer, these places are making it difficult for that to occur.
Right.
They are saying that an official policy is this should not happen. They're working to keep it from happening.
Did you know anyone personally who did it?
I did not want to inquire too closely.
Do you have a feeling?
Yes.
Can you talk about it?
It's pretty straightforward. There was certainly one woman that I worked with. I performed with once, who I was sure was setting up liaisons with some of the customers. I had no way of knowing for sure other than asking, and I didn't want to ask because I felt that it would be rude. And I may have been completely off base on that. It may have been perfectly acceptable to ask. I'm here sort of speaking as a member of the subculture, and yet I was brought in from the outside. I did a piece of fill-in work I ended up doing some more work, but I always felt like a little bit of an outsider. I never felt like I was such a natural hand that I would walk into a place, everyone would know me. I felt totally comfortable. I was the senior person, whatever.
So who were the natural hands? Can you tell us about these people?
There was one woman that I worked with who was very much a natural hand. She was very good at what she did, and I mean that very literally, because she was actually able to, when she tried, she was able to get the other workers there excited, which is quite the challenge if you think about it.
You're sitting there all day doing this.
I never sat there all day. The longest I ever was in one of these places to work was for a 4-hour stint.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes very wearying work. You can only physically do, aside from the obvious things about physically maintaining an erection, you have to have a whole body language that says excitement or that conveys some sort of emotion.
I have that. I really think I project that.
Well, you radiate.
I can feel that sitting right here.
But you must be exhausted by the end of the day when you radiate all of that sexuality, Peter and I.
Well, I'm wondering did you find it exhausting to do this psychically, or was it just another job for you? I mean, I would be. I mean,
it was not.
I'm very tense when I know that people are looking at me, particularly if they're looking at me sexually. It happens about once or twice a year, and I know it really gets me kind of, you know, very very on edge. I mean, I would think that with 4 hours shifts of people staring at you, that in itself would drain you.
That was not draining in and of itself. However, what was draining was the idea that one has to look perpetually excited, perpetually on the edge of exploding, which means that your muscles have to be always a little more tense, you have to be moving a little more cat-like. If you look like you're just exhausted, then you'll exhaust and bore the audience. Where if you look like you're tired yet aroused, that's quite a different sort of look, or at least a different sort of thing to project.
Can the audience hear you? And do you have like dialogue that you're ad-libbing or what?
We had dialogue that we ad-libbed for a few of these things. Some things we actually set up very explicit dialogues. And the reason we would set up those explicit dialogues is these were things that we did not feel as naturally, and so ad-libbing them would not come naturally. For instance, the married couple with the mistress intruding, or vice versa, or the couple with intruder, is a fairly easy dialogue to ad-lib. First of all, because it's such a standard sort of situation that it's difficult to say something surprising without deliberately saying something surprising, and that would be a very obnoxious sort of thing to do. Whereas in other scenarios, such as some sort of a bondage scenario, for instance, if one does this all the time, or one finds this naturally arousing, then this sort of thing would feel much more natural, and the dialogue would come much more naturally. Also, if one has worked with these people before, where if you show up for a night and discover that you're now working with this girl, Beth, who you've never met before in your life, then you need to very much work out very quickly what the attitude is going to be, who's going to be projecting what kind of body language. Because, for instance, these B&D scenes that we would enact, very much we had to be sure who was going to be projecting some sort of dominance and who was going to be projecting some sort of submission, and that was that did not always map directly. Well, that did not always map directly to the roles as well. For instance, it becomes very easy to assume, say, we bring the lights up, there's a woman bound and blindfolded in a chair, and in walks another woman, say, with a whip, you know, wearing you know, leather bustier and spiked boots and all. This is suggesting, you know, an obvious dominant and submissive role, but in fact, one of the more interesting scenes that I saw two other people enact was exactly that scene with the roles reversed, where the person who was bound was very clearly in control of the situation psychologically, and the dialogue made that clear, and the whole scene was about the role reversal that occurred and performing that exchange of places.
It sounds fascinating, and yet that was one of the parts of Four Rooms that did not work for me. How does this happen? I don't know.
Well, perhaps you should check out the local theater, as it were.
Right.
Sort of like your local music scene, darker and stickier.
Did you go and try and watch as a customer? Did you go around to the other side of the bar just to see what it looked like?
Yes, I did. And I could not get myself into the customer mindset because the first time I did that was the third time that I was to perform. And so at that point, I was very much thinking, well, I've done this twice, so I know basically what I'm supposed to do, but I'm not good at it. And so I found myself more looking for pointers.
What did you ever talk to customers? I know that it might have been difficult, but...
That was very much discouraged, and I didn't, because I wasn't sure what I would say.
Right.
I ended up in a conversation with a customer one time. The customer had in mind something very specific they wanted to see, and she was willing to pay to have this scene enacted for her. And so...
What was it?
It was a bondage scene involving two women and a man. And she had very specific acts she wanted to see in a very specific ordering she wanted things to be done in. And we were basically staging a little private play for her.
I'm fascinated by this because I have been in, like I said, any number of these institutions or these places, and I could count the number of times I've seen women in them probably on one hand, the one I'm not using at the moment. How frequently is it? How frequently does it happen in your estimation? Do women utilize these places? Maybe I'm going to the wrong places.
I don't have a good estimate for that because I would try to not be looking at the people
right.
when I was there, when I was going to work, when I was not performing. I would tend to sit either behind the counter, in a corner, in a back room, something like that. And just sit and read, and of course, you know, by read, I mean, I'm talking about I'm bored, so I'm paging through porn again, because that's what we got.
So I don't remember what kind of town this was, but did you live near this place? I mean, wasn't there a danger that you would meet your customers at the local Piggly Wiggly?
No, I did not live near these places. That was something I worked to explicitly avoid, was working at any place near where I lived.
That makes sense.
Don't you think that the customers would also be working that way, to also go to places that were far away or not next door to where they lived? Because if everyone goes to places next door, who's left to actually protest the places that are right next to where they live?
That's true, and that did occur to me. And at a certain point, I was relying on a combination of the law of averages and natural discretion.
Mutual assured discretion.
Well, frankly, the person who is going to drive half an hour out of their way to go to one of these places is not looking to walk up in the middle of the street and say, "Hey, saw you at the peep show last night."
Right. I mean, just from a geometric standpoint, since the country is two-dimensional, I mean, yeah. the amount of area in the country increases by the square of the distance from the strip bar. So, you know, you have that on your side as well. Just inserting a little geometric point for you to ponder.
DJ 2000, have you ever gone to places like that? I mean, am I the only person who's never heard of this?
Well, I'm actually supremely intrigued. I actually didn't realize that it was available in a place like Pennsylvania. I mean, I was sure, you know, New York, of course, must have a place like that. And the only place I've actually personally been to was in Germany, actually. I went to this street. I forget what it's called. It's the sleaziest street in all of Europe. It's in
Wilhelmstrasse,
Hamburg. And then, I don't know what the street's called, in the northern part of Germany. And, you know, I was in this... There's this woman on a little lazy Susan, and she was spinning around, and I was watching her. But she unlike you, who appeared to take some pride in your performance, she was appeared extremely bitter and bored, and she was just kind of, you know, absent-mindedly rubbing her vagina, and you know, I must have given her a dirty look or something. I mean, it was just like I was so unpleased with her performance, but she gave me back some kind of dirty look, and I just left because it just wasn't working for me. So anyway, my experience was all, you know, just bad. And so maybe, you know, DJ Peter and I need to go on a little road trip and experience some of these places.
I'm game, you know, we can special report.
I'll be looking forward to hearing about it.
Well, you might have to come with us. We should really rent the requisition the Love Line Winnebago and tour the entire, you know, North Atlantic.
Still working on that fabulous MTV contract.
Exactly.
621-WRCT or 268-WRCT.
This is your last chance to call because we're running out of time, so don't be shy.
If you have any questions for our reformed erotic dancer friend.
Well, so let's talk about that.
Look like much of a reformation to me.
Well, it's so interesting learning how one fakes erections. Off that point.
Yeah, you didn't share your secrets with us.
Well, he did say that he put a toe in the sheet or whatever.
Right. Like the first time it happened, I had to turn around and I had to display an erection, and frankly, it wasn't happening. And so I'm pausing in turning around, and it became very clear to the woman I was with that I was pausing, and she intuited why and reached around and grasped me by my penis and by my hip and sort of pulled me, you know, suggesting, you know, rotate, and with her hand simulated the effect basically by squeezing me rather harder than I would have liked.
Oh, right. Fabulous.
Fabulous is not the word that was coming to mind at the time, and yet, in some ways, it relieved a lot of anxiety, because that was one less thing to worry about, at least.
I bet you looked excited.
I'm sure I had quite a look.
I'm still trying to get a picture of what happens during these performances. I mean, is there, for example, bona fide fellatio that happens, or is it all sort of pretend?
It's largely pretend, although when you're talking fellatio and caningula, it's a very gray line as to what's pretend and what's really a tongue upon a genital. In some sense...
I don't know, that seems pretty cut and dry to me. I mean,
I'll play Mr. President for a moment and insist upon a precise definition. Was there tongue on genital? There was occasionally. We tried to avoid it because we weren't into it. Was there arousal? No. There was no arousal. It was anytime it was exciting or fun. It was more exciting or fun in a play acting kind of sense. And you know.
Right. I mean, that's what I was wondering. I mean, on one hand, you might think that the easiest way to make it look like you're giving someone a blowjob is to actually give them a blowjob. On the other hand, maybe that's completely the wrong.
I would think that would be much harder, especially in the blowjob case, because so it would be necessary for the purposes of the activity for both people involved, or however many people involved, to look as if they're having fun, they're enjoying it, or to have a look appropriate for the scene. And to maintain a specific look during arousal, I imagine, would be rather difficult. I've never videotaped myself when genuinely aroused, but I imagine that I look something more like some sort of space alien or drug addict with the strange faces than...
I tend to look angrier when I'm aroused.
How many times did you dance or perform, roughly, to the nearest...
I would say 10 or 12. Okay. And that would be occasions rather than incidences. So, you know, an occasion I might go and I might be there for 2 hours, and in that time, do maybe three,
however many shows,
three shows.
You said you worked on tips at least partially. How did that happen if you weren't talking to the customers?
The customers often had mechanisms for delivering tips. They would pay in advance. Sometimes they would pony up front. This is where it gets into the interesting aspects of the subculture, because I never experienced this from the customer side, to be honest. And so sometimes the manager would come to us and say, "Hey, this guy gave us an extra $50 ahead of the show. Make it a good one for him." And that's, just paying the extra money up front is the way of requesting the special show or a little more excitement or whatever. Sometimes there would be a tip afterwards, sort of a gratuity, a thank you very much, as much as you have a nice meal, you leave behind a gratuity. On one occasion, a customer actually shoved money through a physical peephole. This was not a place with a one-way mirror, which is what a couple of them had. And they shoved a $20 bill through, and I wasn't sure how to deal with that, because it was not clear to me what information was to be conveyed. Were we suddenly supposed to jump up and down and be excited, or is this approval for what's going on and we're supposed to do whatever we were doing? And I tried to take my cue from the two people I was working with at the time, and they ignored the situation, so I did as well.
Is it someone's job to sort of sponge off all the semen that collects inside these booths, or this is off the top.
I explicitly didn't want to ask about that.
are they self-cleaning? So I guess you don't know.
Self-cleaning would imply, I believe, a level of investment in technology that these places didn't go for. Comfortable chair would be rather more expensive than these places were willing to pay.
I'd like to ask. Did this? You said you were doing this, or you got into this to do it with your girlfriend, who needed a man. Did this affect your sex life with her?
That's a subject I sort of skirted earlier. Yes, it did. It had an interesting effect, because this is something that Peter and that DJ 2000. I believe both asked, which is how I felt and how genuine the feelings were, and what was I ever aroused? And there were a couple times where we would do a show together, and as a result, I would end up and she would end up feeling genuinely aroused later on, or afterwards, and so we would have an experience together. But there were other nights when it would leave both of us exhausted, and we would look at each other and say things like, "Well, I'm going to go take a shower and go home. See you tomorrow."
How much did you get paid?
It varied widely. My first night, I was just doing fill-in work. I was doing it more as a favor to her. And so when I was handed $30 for coming in and doing one show, I thought that was really amazing. And as it turns out, that was amazing.
The show lasted how long?
This was 15 minutes.
That is pretty amazing.
Yeah, as it turns out, it was amazing. And I didn't know it at the time, but she had also given me her money and only took the tips for herself. And I did not get the tips, and that was so I didn't know what to expect, and so when I found out later that's what had happened, I was quite surprised. And so the rest of the time I would work for a cut of the number of people who were there to watch the show. Generally it would be anywhere from 25 cents ahead a minute that I was getting paid to, through to a certain number of dollars a night for showing up. I did not get the tips. The shows that we were doing were primarily oriented at male customers, as I believe Peter was alluding to earlier. And so they were primarily there to tip the female customers, the female employees. And I was there to more sort of provide a backdrop, the supporting actor, as it were. Mm-hmm. The one particular show that I mentioned before, that a woman came in with specific notions. She had an amount of money she was willing to pay, and that was split between us evenly as the performers and the management of the location. The management took half.
So it sounds like, you have this entirely sort of purely objectivist way of negotiating for each show how the money's going to be distributed based on who the intended audience is.
Yes.
Is that true? Or?
Yes, that's very true. That's at least the way it seemed to me. Again, as I said, I was not hugely into it. Career-wise, I got into it that night that I showed up with my girlfriend at the time, and I was willing to do it some more because it seemed kind of interesting. And to be honest, I was quite fascinated with the notion of being a professional stripper, and it was an experience unlike anything I'd had before in my life, and was unlikely to be duplicated later, because I still would not know how to walk into such a place and say, "So, you need a guy tonight?"
How old were most of the people working?
The ages vary.
Including you.
At the time, I was in my early 20s. I was often the youngest person present. The ages tended to vary. The women, there were a couple in their mid-20s. Most of them were in the 35 to 45 age range. There was one woman that was 52. Looked quite good for her age, I must say. And she had been a dancer in these higher-end clubs when she was younger. And so she still had very much, she had a very very muscular and supple body, and she would actually do shows where she danced.
Did you have any sort of notable or disturbing experiences, customers that freaked you out, or did one of the women come at you with a knife or anything? Sort of cool like that.
nothing quite so notable. There was a bit of a scare one night when a bunch of police cars pulled up with their lights flashing, and all I could think was, "Oh my God, I'm going to jail." Was my very first thought, because, like I said before, while I was pretty sure that what we were doing was legal, I was not totally sure. And let me tell you, there's nothing quite so so unsure as that feeling of, police cars pulling up with the lights flashing while you're standing there wearing absolutely nothing in some roadside shack. And
instead, you just had to give the special show to a bunch of police officers, presumably.
No, as it turns out, they were there to arrest a customer.
I'm sure that the flashing lights do nothing to help you maintain that aura of arousal.
At the moment, I suspect that most of the customers were not worried about the aura of arousal either. Business was very poor for the rest of that night, and we went home early.
Do you have any other urges to resume this kind of lifestyle, maybe by having an internet amateur porn website, for example? Or
honestly, no. Part of it is that there was a degree of anonymity in that, and somehow I feel there would be less, partly because at the time I could be sure that nothing was being recorded. The management of these places was simply so cheap that you would not be concerned at the time of hidden cameras or anything. These days, camcorders are cheap enough that I would actually be concerned about a hidden camcorder. Customers were never allowed to bring recording equipment of any kind in, and they were checked, and they were not allowed to bring bags or cases or anything like that in, and there were quite a variety of good reasons to forbid that, and none of us saw any reason to contest that.
So I've always heard the assertion made that the sex industry is pretty much controlled by the mob. Does your experience tend to confirm or tend to disparage that theory?
I don't know, because I was not involved in that end of it. Mm-hmm. I could easily imagine that, say, protection money was being paid, or that these places were owned outright, or whatever. Frankly, the people that I dealt with were clearly not, I will say, members of the mob. I could not see them being either bright enough or physical enough or contributing enough to be full-fledged members of such an organization. I could see them maybe being flunkies or, like I said, paying some sort of protection money or membership fee or whatever you want to call it.
So did you enjoy the company of your co-workers? I mean, going back to the sort of Pretty Woman paradigm, can you imagine these people being your friends?
I was certainly friendly with them, but I would be I find that I can be friendly with almost anyone in almost any circumstance. They for the most part, they were nice people. There were a few people who were predisposed to be rude to me, to be unpleasant, for whatever reason. I was not so concerned with what those reasons might be, because such people make it clear early on that they plan to be unpleasant, and then I would just work to avoid them. Mm-hmm. As far as the Pretty Woman thing goes, well, Pretty Woman is clearly the Cinderella story, literally set in a modern setting. That sort of thing is unrealistic. The prostitute with a heart of gold is a cinematic cliche. But these people were fundamentally nice people. What I was surprised is the number of people doing this. I'll say middle-aged women who did this, who had children, who I would consider to be perfectly normal, reasonable mothers. Because before that, really, I had this mental image that a stripper with a kid had to be some sort of strange person, or there had to be something wrong with that situation. Where this was, mom's going to work and she's going to bring home the money to raise the kids. Some of these women were married, which again had not occurred to me. My mental stereotyping going into that situation really did not correspond with the reality.
So that's the kind of living that these people eked out, was it sort of a reasonable living or?
I would say no. This was not a living for most of them. This was extra money on the side.
I see.
I certainly could not imagine somebody being paid as I was. I mean, I was there as a favor to my friend, and there was no profit in it to be a man in that industry.
Well, actually, I feel like there's so much more to ask you, but we're actually out of time suddenly, and so I want to thank our special guests for joining us tonight. I want to remind our listeners that this is at WRCT Pittsburgh, and thank you all for listening.
Thank
Good night.
You so much.
You're listening to a production of WRCT Public Affairs. The opinions contained within are solely those of the participants. Questions and comments can be addressed to WRCT Pittsburgh, 5000 Forbes Avenue, Pittsburgh, PA, or call 621-0728.